It's great to be here at South By. I was here a couple years ago actually launching something completely different called Sticky Bits, and we were handing out stickers. I don't know if anybody was around for that, but we put in sticker packs in everybody's swag bag, and that was fun, but this is actually quite different. So I just wanted to kind of go through some quick stuff before we chat a bit, and we also have, you know, some news to share with you. So what do you guys think is the most popular song on Turntable? Most people just assume that we're mirroring the Billboard, you know, top 40 or something like that. But what is actually the most popular song is this remix from Ellie Goulding Lights from Bass Nectar. And so it's just an interesting, you know, quite a radical difference than, you know, what you're thinking is the most popular, like, top iTunes songs or whatever else. What do you guys think is the seventh most popular song for an internet music company? Rick Astley. Never gonna give you up. Yeah, there we go. So yeah, people are very into the Rickroll. First song ever played, theme from Rocky. That was actually this person who worked for us, Summer. That was when we were ready to launch. We're like, what should be the first song that we should listen to? And so she wanted to pump us up a little bit with the theme from Rocky. And so with Turntable, you can awesome songs, you can lame songs, and that affects whether the song changes and what time it changes. And so we know that the most lame song will be Rick Astley, and so that usually doesn't stay on Turntable that long until it gets switched. Rebecca Black, of course, for the brief period of time, mostly played on Friday. Skrillex, we have a lot of dubstep, and so Skrillex is getting to a point where people might be getting a little tired of it. And also, interestingly enough, Ellie Goulding Lights, because everybody on Turntable has heard it 17 times. So it also gets the boot sometimes. So I wanted to give you guys stats that are a little different. We tried to pluck some interesting things to talk about instead of just like the normal things that people throw. So we've had 130 million songs played and 65 million awesomes during those song plays. Since we launched, if we just take the amount of time since we've launched, that's about 2.69 awesomes per second since we've launched. And I loved when YouTube gave a similar stat to this about how much is being uploaded. And YouTube is just massive. You know, we're nowhere near that size. But I still found it pretty cool that for every minute since we've launched, 5.28 hours of music is being played at that time. So I said I had some news for you guys, and I wanted to give you this one, you know, pretty big thing for us. And that is, we're now licensed. More correctly, we're directly licensed with the labels. All four major music labels, we're licensed with them now. Instead of being under the DMCA licensing, we now have direct deals with all of them. And we're really excited about this, because this gives us an opportunity to work closely with them on new product features. We get closer access to them, their artists. We can build a lot of cool things that I have in the pipeline ready to push out on product. Like I mentioned, great events with their artists, so we'll be able to throw those more often. We had an awesome party a few nights ago where we had Flying Lotus and Arab Music, and we have a party on Thursday where we have Diplo, Questlove, A-Track performing. So if you guys are still around on Thursday, you should come. And this gives us a path to open up internationally. That's not something we can do right now, but it gives us that path. This is the first step on doing that. And now we actually have to go country by country and work with the publishers and get all of that squared away before we can actually turn on the switch into these countries. But this was the very big first step that we needed to do that. And what I'd like to do with this panel and you know, talk about is the fact that you guys make Turntable awesome. It's our community doing social music, and I think everybody that has played with Turntable has agreed that when you play music together socially, the discovery and the fun just goes way up. So with that, I'd like to bring on the other people onto this panel, Seth, who's our chairman, and Jesse, who's CEO of Sound Control, so that we can chat a bit.
Hello, everybody, and congratulations to Turntable FM. I know this is a huge accomplishment. It's this time last year, Turntable FM was just an idea, or maybe not even. You guys hadn't even launched, not even close. And now look at you. Billboard, TechCrunch has rated you one of the most successful, important music tech companies of 2011. Artists all over are premiering music already on your site, from Steve Aoki to LCD Sound to Wale to Lady Antebellum. So it's great to be here, to be able to ask you guys basically what it took to get you here and a little bit about where you want to go next, and also what you think the future of social music is. So to kick things off, I'd love you guys to tell a little about your history and, you know, your background in the tech and interactive space.
Sure. Before this, like I mentioned before, we started a company called Sticky Bits. And you're right, a year ago at this time, we were actually cranking on code every night trying to get this thing ready to launch by summer. So before we were this, we were Sticky Bits, which was kind of this idea around barcodes and attaching digital content to them. And before that, I guess we can just go through history and stuff. I started another website called Chartbeat, which gives you real-time web analytics, and before that, co-founded BetaWorks, which is an incubator in New York City.
Anybody remember the Sticky Bits sticker packs from 2 years ago?
Nice.
Okay.
If you turn them in, can we give them, like, DJ points?
And, Seth, a little history on yourself, too, please.
I have more history because I'm older than him. I've built a lot of internet startups, technology startups, starting with one of the first online ad agencies in 95 called Site Specific. I was a venture capitalist at Flatiron Partners in the late 90s with Fred Wilson. Started a company called socialmedia.com that did social ads, an investment research company called Majestic Research, and Billy and I just remember it so distinctly a couple years ago, just schlepping these big boxes of sticker packs and putting them in the bags. And if that's not a mental pivot from doing that to being here with record label deals, I don't know what is.
So since you guys have launched 8 or 9 months, this is kind of, it sounds like your first foray into the music industry. What have you learned so far? What have you seen that has worked in terms of launching a company in this new space?
I mean, there was, I forgot who said it, but his general consensus was, don't start a music startup, right? And I think part of that was, there is a lot to do. There's a lot of moving factors. You have to work with a lot of people. You have to work it's a huge production of just multiple parts. It's a lot easier to say, hey, I have this like crazy idea of like a bookmarking site or photos or something like this, where you put in the dev time, and I've certainly done that, where you crank for a few weekends and then you have some minimal viable product that you can put out there. But as far as doing music, you just have so many different discrete steps. You have things like, where am I going to source the music from? Because you can't just, you know, download a lot of music. You actually need a media source, and you need to do all of these things properly. Before we actually had these direct licenses, we were following DMCA, which was a licensing way to be licensed in the United States without having the direct deals. And you have to follow all these rules of what you can play, when you can play them, things like that, how many times you can play an artist in a room. Most famously, Pandora follows those rules, and if anybody has used Pandora, you can see that there's a limited number of skips, limited number of times you can hear specific artists. So there's just a lot of moving balls and stuff to do to get a music startup going.
Yeah, I'd say people wonder if you knew what you know now about the industry, would you do this? And I definitely think we were helped by how clueless we were about what we were getting into, not on the product side, but in the industry side. So it was definitely forgiveness, not permission. We just went, and Billy's like, I've got this idea for this world where people could go into a room with avatar heads and play music together, and lame or thumb up people's songs. And we didn't think through the performance licensing, sync licensing deals with the German publishing arm of Warner. Right? It was just, that sounds great. People will love it. Let's do that. And we were very fortunate in the macro timing sense. Right? Everybody said, I mean, given what happened 5 or 10 years ago with online music startups getting shut down, getting sued, it just cleared out a lot of innovation. A lot of people were afraid of getting into the market. And I think pioneered by Pandora and Spotify and some others, we just kind of came in on this wave when suddenly I think the labels really wanted to see innovation. And, you know, granted, these licenses took six, I mean, we were only around for 9 months, so it couldn't have taken any longer than that. It took Spotify 3 years to get licensed. So this is remarkably fast. And I hope and I believe that the next great social music service will get licensed even faster, because I do think the industry wants to be seen as a friend to innovation.
I'd love to hear about the challenges you guys had in getting these licenses. I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs out there have wondered how they could obtain these. This seems like you're saying exactly many years ago this would be an unattainable feat that you guys were able to pull off in 6 months. And so from your perspective, do you have advice on how to go about getting these licenses for future entrepreneurs that want to come into this space?
As far as the split of workload, just to be clear here, I'm more the product guy. My background is computer science, and I love creating things. And Seth has been more of the lead on the business side, on licensing, on getting all these deals flowing.
Okay, so it's funny, because a couple weeks ago I would have given you a much snarkier answer because they weren't done, and now they're done, so I'm happier. So a couple things in no apparent order is, as with any deal, the labels have tons of opportunities to look at, and they don't have tons of time, they don't have tons of biz dev resources. They're inundated with startups, right? Here at TechCrunch Disrupt, you think about all these music startups, and given the rise of mobile, everybody has a music app, or they have one on Android, or they're coming up with one on Windows Phone, and so it's really fracturing. So there's limited mindshare for the labels. So I'd say the most important thing is just get above the noise and don't overstay your welcome. And for us, we got really lucky last summer when we launched. It was a slow news day. There wasn't a lot coming out. Spotify was on hold because they weren't yet in the US. And so we were doing something pretty interesting, and Billy has an amazing vision for product in terms of creating an experience that nobody's had before. But it was sort of like the clock was ticking, because we knew, you know, this time next year, there's going to be another turntable. There's always the flavor of the month. And so we tried to put a lot of pressure on the labels to, hey, look at the buzz we're getting. We were smart about getting folks from the industry to be angel investors, many of which we can't disclose, but they're very significant, very senior folks who used to run labels, who are in the industry, who kind of blessed us as being more than a flash in the pan. The other thing is, don't do it via email, right? Obviously, I get there. They're in LA, they're in New York. They don't read TechMeme or TechCrunch necessarily, although their associates do. They still look at Billboard, they still look at, you know, magazines, they look at the New York Times print. The other thing that's, I think, just really hard to swallow is your pride when you realize you have no leverage. You cannot, it's very hard historically, you want, when you do a biz dev deal, you want to be able to walk away from the table. And you can walk away from the table with a label, and they're not going to come after you. They're not going to come after you to do something with you. They'll just stay where they are because they know the only way you can get that Jay-Z song is from them. And so, you know, if Warner controls that artist, you can't get that artist content from somewhere else. And so a lot of, I think, entrepreneurs will, emboldened by your venture capital board, you'll over-negotiate, right? And the board will say, no, go back and ask them for this. And so you'll spend 4 or 5 or 6 months, and you'll end up giving the label what they asked for 6 months ago, but you'll have just kind of lost a lot of steam. So you just got to manage that. And I think the key is, like, just get it done quickly, swallow your pride, and just realize if you're in a gray zone where you're working with other people's content, you're going to have to do something. I mean, the bigger you get, the more you fatten yourself up for these entertainment companies. And so you better put something in place sooner rather than later. At least that's my thought.
So with the major labels in place now, as of today, what about that only represents a portion of the music out there? So what about all of the independent content creators? What about the remixes that are going on, that are exploding on Turntable FM? Are those now licensed too? And how do you tackle all of the breadth of the long tail?
The way Turntable works right now is that we have the ability to search through the catalog that we publish, which is powered by MediaNet. But you can also upload songs. And that's a protected right... Of internet users to upload their own music, to share it, and then if it does happen to be something that is copyrighted or something that we can't properly play, we have technology to make sure that we don't play it, and we also, as we work with these labels, we have to become stricter with that. But you're perfectly okay and welcome to upload your own music and play it on Turntable. And if it happens to be somebody else's music, that's when you're personally accountable for that as the uploader. And then there are times if we get a notice from them that we have to take it down, then we'll take it down. And that's the standard kind of licensing that happens across the web. And what a lot of places like Tumblr, for example, that has a ton of uploaded music into it. And they can do that until somebody actually issues, hey, this is our content, you don't have the right to do this right now, and then they have to take it down.
Does that happen often at this point?
We haven't gotten one of those yet. And we've also been working closely with the labels the last several months. So there's really, we're not even before we were licensed, we were still licensed. We were DMCA licensed. And so we've always played by the rules, and we've done things in the proper way so that we made sure that nobody would attack us or that we did something nefarious.
My sense is the labels, it may have used to been the situation where they were looking for the, aha, I got you. That's somebody else. That's my content. You just put it on your server. I'm going to shut you down and sue your parents. I don't think that's the case. I think what's egregious is if you, and there's some examples, I won't mention them, of startups that are like, you know what? I'm just going to create the biggest frickin' music service. I don't care about the labels. I'm going to get 20 million users. And then the labels are going to have to deal with me on my terms because I have the audience. And then I'll do deals, but I'll have so much leverage, I'll squeeze them. And the labels just love that because they have tons of lawyers and they're really good. And they force you to hire really good, really expensive lawyers. And it just becomes a war of attrition and you will lose because the VCs no longer want to back that. That being said, what I've seen for us and for others with the labels is, you know, for example, this takedown situation, like the labels just want to see that you want to do the right thing. They're not looking to kind of poke you and say, got you. They're like, oh, interesting. And there's a lot of interesting. SoundCloud, for example, is a fantastic service. It's powerful. It's growing. Are they licensed yet? I don't think so. But they're clearly talking with the labels, and they all want to do the right thing. And if you talk to SoundCloud, he's like, yeah, I'm not in the business of piracy. I don't want people to upload, Jay-Z's content and download it for free. I want to do the right thing. And so if the labels hear that and they work together, I think there's a willingness. I think what's just hard is there's no there's no API for music data from the labels that you can meter the way that we're used to in a lot of technology and data services companies. And I think the industry is slow there to come up with more self-service content solutions that have biz dev meters attached to it.
It makes sense. So shifting directions, I want to talk briefly about the launch, because you guys just caught molten hot lava right from the beginning, and then big investors came on board or partners came on board and really helped as you guys that blessed you early on. Was there a strategy in this? Did you guys think that this was going to happen? And when you launched, like, did you kind of plan on catching so much heat so early? And then when it did happen, how did you leverage that?
You always are hopeful that it happens, but I think the best thing is to be realistic and prepare for what you think is going to happen. And you have to do that when you're building product, because if you build your product to scale, like YouTube scale from day one, it's not going to ship for 5 years, and then you might have it come out and nobody wants to use it. So what generally happens, and what I recommend entrepreneurs to do, is build a product that you know will at least hold up for some usage, and then you don't have to scale it to YouTube the next day. You get to work with your traffic and scale up with your traffic. And so the first few months after we launched Turntable, because it was so successful and everybody was just jumping at it and wanted to play with it, we for several months were just doing different scaling operations, getting the database cleaner, doing all the crazy code bugs and bottlenecks and finding all this stuff. And
cut off new subscribers.
With some moments we actually stopped new users coming in. And Billy did something I don't think he's gotten credit for, I think, which was genius. Which is the I hate to use the word viral hooks because it sounds really appy and wonky. But the way that Turntable grew specifically was when you were DJing, we built a system that preyed upon your ego. Because when you DJ, you want to tell your friends how fucking great your musical taste is. And Billy had a button for posting it to Facebook or tweeting about it. And so we had this incredibly great virtuous circle where someone would go in a room and there'd be five people and I'd be playing the latest Dead Mouse track and it wouldn't be enough people. I wanted more audience. I wanted my ego to be stroked more. And so, you know what? I'm going to tell all my friends on Facebook and then more people would show up in the room and then they'd be in the room and they'd share it with their friends. And it was all organic, right? There was no PR department, there was no marketing budget, there was no advertising. What started to happen is, so I remember I tweeted about it, you know, as soon as the site went live, and I had 10,000 followers, and someone came into a room, and Chris Sacca, who's one of our investors, came into a room, and he was playing music, and then he tweeted about it, and then...
Was he on board at that point?
He had been an investor in Sticky Bits, and he stayed an investor into Turntable. But the point was, it was just this sort of amplification of retweeting. At a certain point, that burns out because people get concerned about their news feeds and they don't want to be, you know, spamming their followers. But it was a wonderful 30 days to kind of watch this thing just come out of nowhere.
Was it like exponential growth day one? How many thousand users? And then you could see like by the end of the 30 days?
The thing is, there's so many apps out there. I don't have to name any of them because a lot of them are here. They're spammy, and they're all about viral engineering. And they don't have an artist product visionary creating an awesome experience that people love and they want to share about. All they're focused on is how do they increase their user numbers so they can raise venture capital at higher valuation. And that was never the case. And Billy's whole point is, if it's a great enough product, we don't have to market it. It will market itself, which I don't always believe in, but... by and large, great products people love and they want to keep using.
So let's talk a little about artists using the service and artist development and how this is actually working for helping to break artists. What artists have you had gravitate towards the site? Has it been more of an outreach versus artists reaching out to you? And how do you see artists using this service?
Well, in the beginning, it was all their artists, the artists and managers coming to us and saying that they want to try it out, they want to actually do things like release a song or have a listening party or whatever else. And so we did that for a really long time. We started to have so much of that coming in that we actually then hired a dedicated artist relations person, Jordan, who's out there, who is now actively working with those artists, and he's actually organizing them into cool events. Like we have every Tuesday, we have Turntable Tuesday, where we bring on another artist, and they'll just play. And sometimes we've had
they get their own avatar head. So he did not come out with a Snoop Dogg head, but he could have.
Yeah, we've had Snoop Dogg, Wiz Khalifa
premiering their albums on Turntable FM.
Yeah, they were playing with it. We had who were some of the other big ones? Lady Antebellum,
Diplo.
Who
else we had? Jordan. My Morning Jacket, Mike Posner,
Wale.
It's good. It's just going to increase. And so even for who was here on Saturday at our party? Oh, that's welcome. It was a good party. If anybody's around Thursday, it's an amazing party. We'll have Diplo and 8-Track and Questlove, and they'll all have their avatars, not the heads at the party, but they're all coming on to Turntable in the last couple weeks to DJ on Turntable leading up to the party where they're going to be DJing, obviously, offline.
Yeah. The thing, I guess the question is, like, why do they want to do this? And I think that one of the cool things with Turntable is we cap rooms to a size of only 200 people. And it gives this feel of this tiny little club that you just actually happen to walk into and play an amazing show at. And then you can still talk to people. When you play Terminal 5 in New York, you can't talk to people individually. But when you have 200 people in a room, you can actually converse with the artist. And then sometimes they even will set up a room where they're playing alongside with other people. And then people are playing a song after the artist, and the artist is then like saying, "Hey, good pick." And that stuff is just awesome to interact with your artists, with artists that you love online and have those conversations. It's really an experience you can't get anywhere else.
So you guys have done another area that you guys have innovated in is in IRL and live integration, taking a social site and doing a lot of different lives interactions and activations. Can you talk a little about what you've done and where you think, did it help build your brand, and do you think that it continued to, like, where you want to go with the Turntable IRL experience?
I think it's an interesting concept. It's certainly fun when you have DJs around the U.S. playing your party. Like, that's just kind of fun to think about. Like, if I plug in a Turntable FM room into my party, and we've had this several times, and then just have random people around the U.S. playing your music, it's a neat event. And I think it plays to, you know, one of the big things that I think we should really talk about is the social benefit of playing music together. Every time I'm on Turntable, for every hour, I learn about two or three artists that I've never heard about before, and I fall in love with. And you just, I don't get that experience on any other radio experience. Spotify is a different kind of experience. We get compared a lot to Spotify, and Spotify is more of this compliment. I still use Spotify. I love using Spotify because Spotify is on demand anything. So any artist that's in Spotify, I can play their track. Whereas we are more of this suggestive radio from people in the community that maybe have better taste than me or know better artists, or it doesn't even have to necessarily be better, it just has good taste. I trust them, and then they play people that I haven't heard before, and as well as a mix of people that I have heard before. So we all love to show each other and tell each other songs that you might not know. Like I have this whole relationship where with my sister, we try and give music back and forth, and it was actually part of where Turntable came from. In the real world, I would always just like say, "Hey, you have to listen to this song, check out this song," and she would do the same to me. She'd be like, "You have to listen to this song," and generally the way people do that now online is like they email YouTube links to each other, which is it works, it's functional, but it's not the best experience, and it doesn't really play to, you know, I want to be here and I want to discuss this music and I want to see what's next.
But can this work in a club? Oh,
yeah. So just share. So when I was growing up, maybe a little bit after I was growing up, you know, in the day of MTV, you know, people would be in their garages, or back even further, they'd want to be in, you know, rock bands. And, you know, when I was younger, it was like being in a garage and, you know, you're a suburban Jewish kid in Newton and you want to be LL Cool J because you want to be on a music video, right? And I think kids today, like my Charlie, my 10-year-old's friends listen to dubstep. 10-year-olds are listening to dubstep. They want to be DJs in Ibiza. They don't want to play at the Roxy, right? So Turntable is this amazing community and channel for that emergent culture. In some ways, functionally, we're more of a jukebox than a turntable where you're mixing, but the zeitgeist that we're capturing and the energy that we have is all about that. So not only are we getting the great DJs like 8-Track to come into Turntable and spin, but I think the next Skrillex is going to be found within Turntable. I mean, if Skrillex is 21, you know, where's the 15-year-old that's going to be getting $500,000 a night at the Wynn in 3 years? I think it's in our community. I hope it's in our community. And they're doing mashups, and they're doing remixes, and they're playing dubstep.
Well, I think that's... So the use case of Turntable is anybody can DJ. And actually, some people are scared, like, I have to be a professional DJ to actually DJ on Turntable. And it's not true. All you need to do is just pick a song and play it. And it's actually really rewarding when you see the rest of the room respond to that and love the song that you pick. I think what has naturally happened is because we are kind of like this testing ground for music, it's not necessarily that you have... these huge DJs that all they want to do is hang out in Turntable, but you have the people that are creating remixes, creating new music. They're like, this is a fantastic testing ground where I can go and I can just play the song and see what people in the crowd think with having like a low embarrassment level, right? It's not the same as I'm going to go book this venue, have like 100 people show up or 200 people show up, and then they all start booing me off the stage. Like, if that actually happens on Turntable, you just close your browser, you're semi-anonymous. It's like, okay, let's forget that ever happened. So I think that's very appealing to those potential new artists that are out there.
But is there interest in building out the experiential, you know, the platform where Turntable FM becomes live? It takes over nightclubs. I've been to parties where they've been Turntable FM DJ events. I've seen you guys went on tour with Wale as an opening act. Yeah. And we have not seen sites, especially tech companies, do things that innovative in the live arena. And I just am wondering if that's something you would want to continue to expand, and if you've seen growth off of that, and if it's been something that's been an interesting play, and do you go further? Do you go into booking on Lollapalooza this summer as an act? You know,
I mean, it's definitely on our radar, and we love doing those types of events. But as far as what we're trying to do, as far as vision for the product, it's make the social experience of music online better. And we're only scratching the surface. I have a roadmap of all this stuff I want to do in Turntable FM, and right now I have my team. We're cranking hard. Aside from events, doing things like this, we're working and we're creating new features and product that we want to push out. But all of that is trying to drive online social music forward. For some reason, music was consumed offline in a very different way than online. We love listening to music together. Offline, we had listening parties. We used to have record parties. Like, that's what my parents used to do. They used to gather with other people and play each other different records. And we still, that's what we do when we listen to concerts. Jay-Z yesterday, everybody's there packed in to listen to Jay-Z together. And that's a real experience. So how do we do that online? And Turntable is kind of the first iteration of that, but we need to bring that experience online, because somewhere that kind of broke down and it turned into, I'm just going to listen to my iPod, I'm going to take these songs and just listen on shuffle one at a time, and not really get the whole layer of experience and knowledge that comes from the community.
Makes sense. So going further now with social music, you guys are here, you're starting this conversation around where it is and where it could be. How do you see it going further? Like, where is social music as a platform 2 years from now? And where does Turntable FM fit into that?
What I love is whenever we're at panels or conferences or any of these things, there's always the, where are we in 5 years? Where are we in 2 years? We don't know where we're going to be. What we don't realize is we tend to take the information that we have now and just extrapolate, and usually times 10. And that's what we think the future is going to be. But then every now and again, somebody throws a curveball and sure. creates something completely different. And that's what happens. And you can't predict that unless you're part of the innovation that happens to do those.
2 years ago, we were handing out sticker packets.
Well, if you're saying you're building a roadmap. So obviously, you've got a vision for where you want your product to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, but that's 6 months. And that's stuff that we have to first build before we actually release it and talk about it.
I mean, obviously, online is no longer just in front of a browser at a desk. It's mobile. We have a great iPhone app that everybody should try. It's fantastic. And all these connected devices and the internet TVs that connect to your Android application, Android tablet that has your iPhone, I mean, they're all internet-enabled. They all have sound ports. I mean, if we had a speaker system right now and one of us was plugged in, three others of us could take over the whole sound system and have a party right now, right? That's online. That's offline. That's social. That's mobile. It's everything. And to your point, all of the changes have had to happen to enable this transition from online to offline. But just because we're offline doesn't mean we're not still connected and we can't still chat with each other. We can't still dynamically change the music.
So I just want to make sure we have 20 minutes left.
Perfect.
I just want to open it up to questions. If anybody has questions in the audience, I guess we have a mic lined up and we can start taking them. It's not a...
He wants to know, when will he be able to listen to us on Sonos?
They're actually really excited about that opportunity, and we're working on it. Like, we already have on our new iPhone app, we have AirPlay, and all of that stuff is working with all those iOS features. But I'd love to have the ability to have all of our awesome rooms be consumed anywhere on as many services as possible. Part of that is actually coming out with like an API that other people can build against, which is definitely on our roadmap as well.
Maybe gaming, to integrate gaming into Turntable.
Yeah, so I guess I can just repeat the question since that mic doesn't seem like it's on. So we were awesome. Just asked as if we're what type of gaming do we have potentially integrated into Turntable or in plans for. And Turntable is a very basic game right now. You earn points from DJing. If you DJ well and people awesome your song, then you get more points, and then that allows you to get more avatars and different types of avatars. And so the clear direction that we're going to go there is we can expand on that a bit, and we can add different types of things that you can do and change and modify your system. It's not going to be anything that's just like this crazy game that looks like Second Life or something like that. But those kind of dynamics are always really important to us, and it makes the experience better. It rewards people to play good music, and that's one of the most important things that you want to do socially, so that you don't have, you know, the people that love to play funny jokes like playing Rick Astley or something like that, but you have people that want to actually expose you to new music.
Hello, this is Anna from Mexico. I know here in the States you have these whole services as Spotify, Pandora, and right now, Turntable. What does it take for this kind of services to be in other countries, and is it going to be possible for us to have them in soon?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was so excited about our announcement today that we have those directly licensed deals, because that is the first step that we needed to finish and complete before we could start opening up in other countries. So that's one of our big roadmap items that I want to do, that I want to make sure that we open up in other countries, because as much value as we've given to the U.S., when you have that kind of meshing of multiple people in all over the world playing music together, that's an even grander vision, and I think that could be very cool.
Hi, I have like two questions. I think that one of the things that makes Turntable kind of stand out is the fact that it is so social and has the inline chat. I mean, Last.fm has, you can comment on songs, but what makes Turntable great is like you're talking directly with people right then and there. But the other thing that makes it stand out is the graphics, which are adorable. And I noticed that it's like the same artist as the Octocat for GitHub.
Yeah.
Totally cute. I guess my question, I have two questions. My first question is just, I love how you have the bopping heads. Is there any plans for more animation? Like dancing?
Yeah, probably one of our most requested features is I just want to give like a fist pump, you know, like I love the song,
yes.
I want the avatar to fist pump, and those would definitely be awesome. I think at first we just didn't do those types of things because they took a lot of time and we had needed an animator and we didn't have that, and a head bob is really easy, right? Like you take their head off and you just rotate, and it was easy to put in there. But I'd love to flesh out that type of stuff because I think that would add another level of coolness.
One more question. Okay. It's been like a point of debate. Are those bears or mouses?
They're bears.
Okay, thank
bear
you.
Bear suits.
I had a question. You guys mentioned that that the wrong way to go about your startup is to just amass a large number of users and then try to go to record labels and kind of use that as leverage almost in a threatening manner and say, hey, you guys need to work with us now. But for a startup with maybe two or three people, like, really, what is the conversation like, and how should you start that off with partnering with those or showing record labels or showing companies like that that you would rather partner than go against them later?
Well, I wouldn't be afraid that they're going to steal your idea. Right? So there's historically, like, wow, you know, I'm secret, and I don't want you know, Sony to do this themselves. Like, they're not. They have so much on their plate.
I guess it's more even getting their attention. Why would they, like...
Well, I mean, that's harder. I mean, you know, there's no... It just be present. You know, have the conversations early. Try to do something unique. I mean, I think in our case, again, Billy had a pretty unique idea. And if you think about it, the label, if you're the seventh most popular X radio app, you're not going to get a lot of attention. If you're the first one to do something with a certain functionality, they really need to talk to you because they need to figure out a way of thinking about it in their business model, right? So there are aspects of Turntable that are like radio. There are aspects of Turntable that are more like an on-demand service. Like, it's a kind of a hybrid. There's a lot of hybrid interesting stuff going on that doesn't fit in any one category that they're used to, which actually made it easier to have the conversation because they were incented to come up with a template for it, right? So I think your best bet is, you know, like any startup, be original, be innovative, do something that nobody's really doing, and they'll find you, you know. Once you get some usage, I mean, they're definitely, their ears are open. They want to find some interesting stuff. And I do think there's going to be ways, whether... You know, if you're a two-person, you know, shop and you want to just build an app on top of Spotify's licenses using Facebook distribution, or I think the labels themselves will start to make it easier, from what I've heard, for startups to build music services on their sandbox where you get sort of a provisional license for 100 days, don't worry about the legal stuff, and then it's almost like a hackathon. You know, Troy Carter from, you know, Backplane, Lady Gaga's manager, who's one of our investors, you know, they had, I don't know how many people yesterday or the day before hacking music services. And so it's not a threat to the record labels. They're probably paying for this because they don't want to, they want to own a bigger piece of the next YouTube. They don't want it to happen to them. Sure.
Hi. So I was massively addicted to Turntable when it first launched. I was on there hours every day. And while I was supposed to be working freelance from home. And at one point I was like, this is enough, I got to stop. So I had to ban myself from using it, and I haven't actually used it for quite a while. Have you thought of any ways of addressing this problem?
Yeah.
Like make it less addictive or more boring or something.
I mean, I can tell you you're not alone on the, on that type of that usage where you're like...
Did you find a 12-step turntable program?
Yeah. But say something like RDIO, I can listen to an album in the background and mm-hmm. work. Absolutely.
Turntable is definitely more of an intense experience. You're in it and you're active, and part of a chat room is you want to be present and you want to talk to people, and if you just have it in the background, then you miss a lot of that. So a lot of what we're working on is to address exactly that. Some of the future product that you're going to see from us within the next several months is going to be addressing that and making that easier, so that you don't have this kind of feeling where you're just obligated to constantly work on it and then you burn out on it. I mean, another thing that happened too is a lot of people use our app. Probably the majority of our people actually use our app during work, and they don't want what Turntable looks like on their screen while they're working, because it looks like you're playing a video game. And it's like, no, I'm just listening to music. I'm still able to get work done. So all of these things we're working on.
Yeah, it would be great to be able to just listen to a room as radio, but with all the interactive features, it's
impossible. Sorry, can you say that again?
It would be great to just be able to listen to a room as radio, but it's too hard to avoid.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
You mentioned briefly about Spotify and Turntable being actually really great complements to each other. Mm-hmm. Are you guys thinking about potentially doing any app within the Spotify infrastructure?
I mean, it's definitely something we've thought about doing. There are some complications as far as licensing and making sure all the music that because we don't necessarily have exact catalogs, and how do you work on that if somebody in Spotify potentially is playing a song that you can't listen to in Turntable and vice versa. So there's some tricky things that my top priority is always user experience. And I want to make sure that we never get anybody into an experience where they just feel like this completely sucks. Like, I can't hear the music, or I'm not allowed to, or I'm getting some weird error message because of some licensing issue. Like, I don't want that to happen. So if we can figure out those pieces, then absolutely, I think it could be powerful that we work together.
Hi, I'm Natasha. I'm an ad sales person in New York City, so I want to hear about how you guys are going to make money.
Slowly.
That was my question as well.
Okay,
that
cool.
That was my question as well.
All right. And that's a frequent question. I think that, you know, there's kind of what I was just talking about. I want to make sure that whatever we add in makes the user experience better. And so if we start selling virtual goods, or if we start selling advertisements or whatever else it might be, it has to be in a way that doesn't make the experience just completely miserable. I've used music apps that throw like 3 or 4 audio ads at me between songs, and I can't take it. And you know, those types of dynamics, I think you actually start losing, you lose people to other services. So whatever we do add in there is going to make it just cooler, more fun experience. Virtual goods is obviously one of those avenues, and like I said, advertising. But right now, we're just focused on, let's just make the experience solid, because this is still early days. We launched 8 or 9 months ago. It hasn't been a long period of time, and I still think that there's a lot that we need to do on product before we start figuring out exactly, okay, what are we going to turn on and where are we going to make money? It's taken companies like Twitter and Facebook several years before they actually find out what's the perfect model, and those are also companies that are very product focused and want to make sure that we push product forward first.
Hey, my name's Ian. Love Turntable. Two product ideas that I just wanted to get your take on. One of them is very similar to what someone asked earlier. Like, I had this idea of like a passive room where basically fusing Pandora with Turntable. Mm-hmm. So like, I could play something, my friend could play something, and mainly at work, actually, so a coworker could play something. But if, like, the problem is it gets super addicting, and I'm like, I just need to get more points. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So I spend most of my time doing that. So have you guys thought about making a room where it takes what is already has been played and plays similar artists if you don't have anything queued up?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't thought of that exactly, but the ability to pull from songs and vote, like, there's some apps that are doing experiences exactly like that, where you add a bunch of songs, other people can vote, and then the best one gets played.
Yeah.
Sometimes they break down though, because it's kind of like it's voting, it's music by committee, and sometimes you lose some of, like, all of a sudden your problem of like hearing the same song over and over again, the most popular song, kind of happens, and you want to try and get away from that. When you have individual people playing one song at a time, there's a lot of power in that one person's hands. They're controlling 200 pairs of ears out there, and they can play anything they want. And some people take that as an opportunity to play something funny. Others play something that's completely off genre, which is something that you don't necessarily get in Pandora, because Pandora's like, I know exactly what type of music you like. You like this beat per minute, and you like this, and it has to sound like this. And that's all you get. It's the same kind of thing, right? But what happens in Turntable is somebody will just, like, we're in, like, a techno room, and then all of a sudden, like, somebody throws down, you know, Tears for Fears, and the room just erupts and goes crazy and loves it. You know, those kind of experiences you just can't get from an algorithm.
Nice. Cool. And then one other idea. being able to, like, finding rooms for me seems super hard, and I don't know if other people have that, but I just end up in, like, popular rooms and the same stuff gets played. Like, it'd be rad to be able to search by artist or song or something and see what rooms it is.
We actually just launched that 2 weeks ago. So if you type in a song name, it'll show you the rooms that it has played in. It's kind of an underground feature right now. So I guess it's the hipster of our features right now, but...
It's the Williamsburg of Turntable.
Yeah.
So I just had a question for you. And by the way, I do have my Sticky Bits package I ran into before I came in here.
Collector's item.
You can wear the avatar hat home.
I appreciate that. But as a software developer, I think it's, you know, you talk about you have this long roadmap of stuff that you want to work on. Is there a place, I mean, obviously people can come up here and throw ideas at you, but is there a place where we can give feedback? Because, you know... Mm-hmm. Early on, months ago, I was DJing a lot, but then I was like, okay, I just want to listen to it in the background. But as I DJ, sometimes I'm in a room where we're playing Phish and Grateful Dead as opposed to playing dubstep, right?
Yeah.
So I have this huge list of music, but, you know, I have certain pain points I want to express to you guys, like, wow, I'd really like to tag or organize or something this music so I don't have to search through all my crap when I'm in a certain room that I want to DJ with.
Yeah,
so.
We would love to hear feedback.
Is there a place that's set up for
it's
that?
Actually in the app. On the top right, there's a question mark. I believe it's still a question mark.
Okay.
And you can click that, and then a little feedback form comes, and you can give all your feedback. And that's where you can also tell things like if somebody's misbehaving or anything that's happening.
Cool.
And we monitor that. We have somebody who's their full-time job is just to monitor all the user feedback and give us all the suggestions and everything else. And we actually do listen to that, and we push that into our product cycle.
Awesome. Love the product. Rooting for you guys, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you talked a lot about user experience and how that's really important and core to what you're doing. But so something like Pandora or something like Spotify, they have a lot more control over their user experience than you do, because the rooms here, like, they get their own sort of dynamic. There's a layer of community on top of it where people build bots or they have certain rules, and this stuff all emerges. And I'm assuming you couldn't have seen that a priori. So, like, how are you managing that when you're trying to guide this ship, which a bunch of people are rowing?
Yeah.
It's a great question.
Yeah. And all of that stuff has happened organically. A lot of it comes out of necessity, like, too many people want to DJ, and we want to have some type of queuing system so that it's not just a free-for-all. And that definitely gives me an indication, okay, maybe this is something that we actually want to build into the product. So sometimes we might do that. Other times, they seem to be working. They're a little confusing for some people, but it's very cool when you have that kind of just organic stuff happening, bots being built and whatever else. And right now they're not causing any harm, so we're fine with them. If they start doing things like some people write bots that will auto grab the next DJ spot and things like that, we don't think are fair to the other people in the room, because then they can't get a spot if they just happen to see it open, because you just can't click faster than a bot. So those are the types of things that we actually try and shut down. Cool. All right, I think we got the last question.
Hi, my name is Nelly. I love your product.
Thank you.
It's been an awesome experience from day one that I tried it. My question is about your licensing. So you said you have these deals now where you can... How does that affect the user experience? Will we have access to more music? And how do the APIs work for that?
Great question. So as far as in the U.S., it doesn't have as big of an impact on like what music you can hear. That's more international as we expand internationally and we allow people internationally to listen to Turntable as well. the benefit that you'll be getting as a user in the US is that since now we're working directly with all of these labels, we'll be able to have some product and features that we wouldn't normally be able to create under just DMCA licensing. Like I was talking about before, DMCA license only allows you to do specific things. You can only play an artist so many times. It's like three times the same song, three times in a four-hour period. Like, there are all these rules, and there are other things that we just can't do. So now with the licenses and working directly with the labels, we can actually build some of these cool features and ideas that I have that we wouldn't have available normally.
The other benefit is early on, we subsequently shut down international access while we were going through this licensing process. But early on, we had a huge population of Japanese users and Brazilian users, and they were all in these rooms together playing music. And my dad in Massachusetts was in rooms late at night with Japanese people making friends, listening to music, and it was bizarre and awesome. And so simply having a global audience of people going into rooms and playing music together, that in and of itself as a user experience is pretty powerful. Even if the functionality doesn't change, the fact that it's not just someone from San Francisco and New York and Austin and LA, but you really have people around the world choosing music that they like that you may have not been exposed to.
Hey, you also said something about the music industry not having good APIs. In your negotiations with them, have they seemed open to the idea or wanting to create better APIs for startups like yourselves?
I think their mentality is that there are other people that are dedicating their entire business towards creating awesome APIs that you can use to serve your files and search for music, like Echo Nest and MediaNet and 7 Digital. They're all working, and they have like a full team dedicated to it. And they're going to do a better job at the end of the day unless these labels actually hire that many people. And even still, it's great to have like a technology company dedicated to making a great API, and then they'll license through that company. So it works better for us as well, because it's faster for us to develop against an API like that. And overall, I think it'll make the experience better for everyone.
Thank you.
Great. I want to thank everybody for coming out. This is the last day of Interactive. Enjoy Austin. I want to thank these entrepreneurs and amazing men to share the stage with. I want to thank South by Southwest for having us and allowing us to do this. And Party On Thursday is one not to miss if you'll be here. If you missed them this weekend, Turntable FM is doing it right, South by Southwest.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.